Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman Drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what. Step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
You're going to be in for a good ride. I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it, one way or another, good or bad.
Being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hi, Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. Do you ever find yourself overwhelmed with your responsibilities, and it seems like you'll never get it all done? Well, you're not alone. We all need to remember to use our superpowers, the ones we already have but don't use all the time, and take advice and wisdom from one another. Towards the end of the show, in a segment called Superpowers for Success, I ask my guest about her superpowers, and the answers will give you the strength, perspective, and power to keep on being the well woman you are. I'm so happy you're here, so thanks for tuning in. Today's topic is how to change your unconscious story, and hopefully by the end of the show, you'll be inspired to reassess the lessons you've internalized since childhood, begin to look at the challenges in your life as lessons and gifts, and reconsider your ideas about what makes you who you are. This is incredibly important work as we begin the new year. Happy New Year, by the way. For many of you, you have closed out 2016 with some reflection and looking toward 2017 as a year for intense growth and patience and love. And really drawing on our superpowers that we don't always use, but they're there inside of us, to both get through the year and face whatever challenges we're facing in our personal lives, in our health, with our families, in our communities, in the world, and also to draw upon those powers to support us in our successes and achieving those things we want to do this year. So it's an exciting time, and I'm so happy that you're on this journey with me. 2017 is going to be an amazing year in many ways, and I look forward to the journey with you. So back to today's show, my guest is none other than Pam England. Pam is the author of Birthing from Within, a world-renowned book that provides a holistic approach to childbirth by examining it not as a medical event, but as an act of self-discovery. And so this is an important topic for people who have never given birth and people who have. So if you're sitting there thinking, well, I haven't actually given birth to anybody, what does this have to do with me? Just listen up. That's all I can say. It's an amazing conversation. It goes well beyond the actual, you know, birth of a child. It goes deep into how to change your unconscious story. So I want to tell you a little bit more about Pam. Pam lives and works and paints now. She's a painter as well. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, she teaches workshops and speaks at conferences all over the world on topics such as preventing and healing birth trauma, cesarean birth, storytelling, visualizations, and hypnosis, and many other aspects of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. In addition to working on a number of manuscripts, including ones on prenatal nutrition, birth trauma, and cesarean birth, she teaches birth classes and does birth story sessions. In this episode, Pam and I chat about how her birth experience led her to re-examine the way we approach birth preparation, how we can look at big ordeals in our lives as transformational, and what steps we can take to change our unconscious stories about ourselves. The free giveaway today is the 4 steps to start living a well woman life. I love this giveaway because it quickly gives you 4 things you can start doing right away to transform your life. Now to my interview with Pam England.
I am sitting here with Pam England, author of Birthing from Within. Good afternoon and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Pam, we're sitting in your house in Old Town in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You have been a practicing midwife and have now written a book, famous book, really, at this point. How did you decide to write this book? And did it start with your own personal birth? Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, it did start from my own birth. I was a nurse midwife. I had been doing some hospital birth, but also home birth when I became pregnant with my child. And I had a lot of ideas that, positive thinking ideas, cause and effect ideas, anti-hospital, if you want to be at home, you just have to trust birth. And I did everything right. I had a good diet, had a healthy pregnancy, and my labor was obstructed, and I had to go to the hospital, and I had a cesarean. So my whole world literally fell apart. All my belief systems fell apart during that time. And while I was lying on the cesarean table, waiting for my baby to be born, a strange thing happened. A thought came into me, and it literally rocked me. And it was like a question came into me, really, like, what is it I needed to know as a mother to give birth that I didn't know as a midwife? And then another question came into my body, and it literally rocked me, and it said something to the effect of, how is it that women were educated and initiated in traditional cultures? What is missing? And I really, literally, a minute or two later, my baby was born, and a whole nother journey began. So during the next 6, 7, 8 years, I spent a lot of time looking at what traditional cultures did and in imagining it, even inventing it, what they would have done or could have done, or what I could, if we could recreate our cultural journey. And I had to look at how we educate parents. Birthing from Within really began with the shock of my having a cesarean. And it turned my attention from external preparation, education, information preparation, into an internal journey, or an internal journey that also included education, because we live in a culture that we have to have information to birth and birth in a hospital. So I had to look at how I had been doing childbirth preparation. And I had been using a very traditional model. And what I did is each time I taught, I would throw out one traditional class curriculum kind of agenda, and I would just add one new thing. And the very first thing I ever added was lullabies. I had parents sing lullabies, and they were nuts about it because I thought that would make them feel like parents instead of patients. And then the next class, I introduced birth art for the first time. I had everybody make a picture, and everybody got on the floor and was making pictures and talking about their what they were seeing inside and what the images they drew made them think about and what new questions came up. And it was the most dynamic thing I'd ever experienced teaching childbirth classes in all of the years I'd ever taught them. So my confidence was boosted right away.
And was this before you wrote the book? Was this part of your research, or was this after you wrote the book?
No, this is before. I didn't even know I was going to write a book. I was just trying to solve the problem I just lived through. What happened to me was happening to other women. And I said, I have to solve this problem for them because now I'm enlightened. And if we keep teaching them this other way, then they're also going to be shocked and unprepared for birth. And they're going to blame themselves afterwards. So everything has to change. So I started to change the phrase from education to initiation when I taught classes.
And what do you mean initiation?
Well, it's often said that birth is a rite of passage. It's one of the great blood rite of passages. So I had to study, what does that mean? What is a rite of passage? Now, when I had my cesarean, I didn't understand it. I thought I did. So I thought, oh, I missed my rite of passage. I blew it. I didn't have a rite of passage. I had surgery. I failed. I screwed up. I had a medical birth that doesn't count. And just on and on, like blaming myself. Well, So I looked into what is rite of passage, and really what it means is when a human being goes from one a role in society, but not just a role in society, but everything that goes along with it, with understanding and experience. And something is created for that person, a ritual, an ordeal, or it could be something that is not created for them by humans, but by the holies. I mean, something happens. And for the human being to go through that, that ordeal, there's this great sacrifice. They have to let go of the thing they thought was true, or who they thought they were, or what they thought they should do or be, or how it should turn out. They don't give it up willingly. They don't. In fact, they hold on to it, fighting and screaming all the way. And it's still ripped from them. And it's in that severing that the question comes of, well, then if I'm not that, who am I? And if that isn't true, what is true? And that's an internal journey. And it's such a great shock to psyche that it could cause depression. It can cause confusion. People can go through withdrawal from relationships. And so many things can happen.
You mean the actual birth can cause those things?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Because even a normal birth can be so shocking to the psyche. For example, a woman who is told over and over that birth is natural, cats don't have pain and humans don't have to if they just trust their bodies or relax. I would call those absolute teachings. And if a woman believes them in an absolute way rather than a relative way, even if her birth is normal, she'll think, but it hurt. I must have done it wrong. I was scared. I guess I didn't trust birth because I was scared. Where am I going with this for a minute? So even in a normal birth, when she has this, what she thought to be true or was told to be true is not true, it causes it's just a great shock to the mind and disruption of her personal story. So she has to go on a search. And that's part of her return postpartum, to make sense of it afterwards. Well, I'm kind of talking in circles now. And I'm hoping you can edit this to make it make sense.
Yeah, well, no, we'll you're fine.
It's okay? No, sometimes it's hard to... So let me go back to your original question. What was it? What made me do this? Oh,
well, let me ask you too, is birth or does birth necessarily mean spiritual, or is it, because you talked about a rite of passage and it can be very emotional and spiritual, or it can be a medical event. Is there a right way or a wrong way, or how do you answer that for women?
To have the rite of passage experience? Well, I've come to the conclusion, or at least it's my story, that every birth can be a rite of passage. And whether it's a natural one, a water birth, a highly medicalized one, whether the birth is normal but the baby is sick afterwards, all kinds of things can happen. And the fact that during that ordeal, we call it an ordeal when you think about rite of passage or quest, it's the moment when something happens you did not expect to happen. That's when you're tested. Or you do something you never expected to do. You do something you thought you would never do, like ask for an epidural. That was totally against your belief system, and after 40 hours of labor, you did it. And that means that you're no longer who you thought you were, but you don't know who you are. So you're in the in-between place of, I'm not who I thought I was, and I don't know who I am. That's the rite of passage. And so even a normal birth will probably offer you one sliver of that experience somewhere, whether it's in pregnancy or labor or postpartum. And it's that moment that women judge themselves for, but it's actually that's the moment that's the rite of passage.
And is that what you talk about in your book, where you go from not being a mother to being a mother through birth? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So think you're referring to the part where I say there's a transition from maiden to mother, when I use the archetypal phrase. Yeah. So when a woman is pregnant, she is, in a way, a mother. I mean, she's carrying a baby. She's awakening the mother self. So she's between being a maiden, which is an old term. It's not a better one for feminists nowadays. I just don't know a better word for it. So we're going to use the capital M maiden archetypal phrase, which just means a woman who has not yet had her, she's not yet a mother. And so when she becomes pregnant, she begins to gestate motherhood. But even when she gives birth, she may not fully realize her mother self. She may not realize her mother self until the day after she gives birth, or maybe 3 weeks later. I mean, it's a gradual process. Giving birth is part of it. Being pregnant is part of it. But there's something, the inner journey is much more rich and subtle than this black and white image, right?
And why do you think it is that women can suffer postpartum depression or these traumas, birth traumas? Why can't it be something wonderful to celebrate and be feel good about? Or can it?
Let's see.
I mean, does it always have to be something traumatic? It just seems like, can it be something that we could prepare moms for that would be celebratory and wonderful? I mean, of course, it's, you know, there's all the pain and all of that, but does it always have to be something traumatic?
Yes and no. Traumatic is hard to know what that word means to different people, but to prepare a woman, this is one of my issues with childbirth preparation. To prepare a woman, that birth is, again, an absolute statement, wonderful, and it's a blessing, and it's empowering, and it's these absolute words. And of course, if she's not yet initiated or does not know how she will be initiated, that's like a card that's hidden in the deck. She will create an image in her mind of a wonderful, empowering birth where she's strong and it's meaningful and it's peaceful and it looks like the video she saw. And if the card she got dealt through no fault of her own is, again, the 36-hour labor or the labor that stopped and started for 3 days and she's exhausted or fetal distress or anything, then all of a sudden her really fantasy image of birth is shattered. But having that shattered is not the problem. The problem is that the people who prepared her, the culture that prepared her as a child and not as an adult warrior to deal with the ordeal she's going to go through. So she's in her fantasy naivety facing something very adult, very complex, very uncertain. I mean, you know, the other word for labor, it would be uncertainty. Labor land is uncertainty land. So,
Well, and I notice you have this ball that you talked about earlier that if people say, how long is my labor going to be, you say.
Oh, yeah. Let me check my crazy eight ball.
Yeah, because we just don't know. It's uncertain is what you're saying.
Exactly.
The whole process is uncertain. Now, what is...
I did want to say one more thing about that for just a moment. On the other hand, I'm going to talk about the other side of that story. Now, a woman can have a very long labor or surprises in her labor she didn't want, an unwished for epidural, an unwished for cesarean, an unwished for lots of things could happen. And what I find really interesting is not always traumatic for women. And the question I'm searching all the time for is, why was it traumatic for her but not for her, when it's a similar story? And what I've been discovering is it has to do with a couple of things. One is the expectation of what will happen. But also, really, the underlying thing that is the most important is the story she is telling herself, even before labor, what it will mean about her if it happens to her. So again, I'll use myself as an example. Before I had a cesarean, not only did I judge women who had cesareans, they were weak, they allowed it to happen to them, and if only they were doing what I'm doing, it wouldn't have happened to them. If only they had had a home birth, they would have not been sucked in by the medical model, and really pretty childish thinking at the time. And when I had my cesarean, it was like the best thing that ever happened to me. I was literally enlightened on that table, and I couldn't have been enlightened any other way. I was bullheaded about the whole thing. But while I was, do you know that I was still on the table? I think I was in recovery or on the table when I had the first nugget of insight. And I went, oh my God, I'm traumatized. I was shaken to the core that I had a cesarean as a home birth midwife. My God, what would people think? How did this happen to me? And the thought came to me, you know, you were traumatized before you ever went into labor because of the stories you were telling yourself about yourself and other women who had cesarean. It didn't happen because you had a cesarean. You were already in trauma. You know what I mean? It's like you're already an oak when you're an acorn. I don't know if that makes any sense, but from that moment on, I went, I need to help women look at their beliefs about, not about the medical model, not about epidurals, not about breastfeeding and those topics. Those beliefs about those topics, whatever. We all have ideas about. The most important thing is, what do you believe about yourself if that happens to you? And to change that in pregnancy so that if it happens to her, she has a head start on not being in self-loathing and being more, potentially more in self-love.
And do you think that in other cultures this is taught more naturally?
No, not at all.
Or not? Okay, not at all.
Do I think it? I don't think it's being done.
Well, you studied other traditional cultures, you said?
Yeah, I studied how people were initiated. But in terms of birth, I don't know. Nobody really, I looked really hard. And if somebody has information on this, I would love it. I don't know if anthropologists have studied in when cultures were still more intact, how do you prepare women for birth? And, you know, even if you ask them how do you do it, they might say, oh, we give them this herb. That's maybe what they think an anthropologist wants. But, you know, she's being prepared. Wow, we're getting into a whole big thing here. I'll just go with it. You know, wow. This is exciting. We can look at our own culture, and I'm making the assumption that what happens here happens in all human cultures that has language and stories, and we're all storytellers. So from a time a kid has language enough to understand a story, they're starting to hear about how a person should be to be loved, how a person should be when they're sick, whether doctors and hospitals are safe, whether people making noise are okay or it's embarrassing or shameful. So we're having all kinds of little things that are peripheral to birth, but not exactly about birth, but they're related. So if you're supposed to be seen and not heard, does that apply to everything but birth? No, it applies to birth. So but no one actually said that. It just kind of gets integrated. And how we respond, how we were conditioned, I guess is the word, by our families, by our religion, by our just the time and space we were born into. Look, every 20, 30, 40 years, things shift a little bit. So as I'm teaching over many, many decades now, I'm actually watching people's stories change. It's because the stories they heard growing up changed, and the story of birth, therefore, has changed. Anyway, so when we go to other cultures, and in our culture too, this childbirth preparation begins in childhood, only it's unconscious. So all the ways, again, all the things you have to do to be loved, to be brave, to be respected, to be worthy, to belong to your culture and family, all of those are taught to you, and they're not specifically about birth, but they have their roots into birth. Now, the next thing we want to look at is, what is a child's first birth story? And this applies to every culture. And I started to do a study of this. Now, this is really interesting. When we were little, every one of us had there was a point in time, first we had no language, so stories couldn't really come in. And then we had enough language to understand stories. But there was a point with enough language, with story, we had no story about birth. Every grandma, grandpa, aunties, uncles, everybody was just here. There was no idea about how did we get here. And then all of a sudden the question comes, how did we get here? The creation story. The kid wants to know the creation story. Or they see a cat being born or see something on TV. And all of a sudden the kid wants to know how our baby's born. So now there's an opening to let in the first story about how our baby is born. Are they, you know, there's wonderful stories about, you know, they're under cabbage patch leaves and the stork brings them, that kind of mythology. But then there's also the nativity story. If you're raised Catholic as I was, fantastic story, one of the best birth stories ever. And that influenced me. A baby born in a stable under the stars because there was no room in the inn, and I'm a home birth midwife. Could there be a relationship? Probably helped. All right. But then there's also the unconscious stories told around the child growing up. Women talking, someone's on the phone, gossiping. Maybe it's your own verse story you're hearing, but it could be gossip. It could be something on TV, something on the radio. It's coming in, but no one is actually sitting down and explaining birth to you. But you're getting the birth story because you didn't have one. Remember, there was none, and now there's an idea. So sometime, how do all these kids know that babies are born in hospitals if no one actually had a course in school? Because they just keep hearing that babies are born in hospitals. So they start to, that's the story then. All right. Well, the first story a person hears, this is so interesting, makes an imprint on them. And most people don't even realize that the kid is listening and making a picture. And the story that the parents actually lived or have in their mind might look like, you know, let's say three blue cubes. But when the kid hears it, since they have no reference for that, they're seeing a star and a red ball and, you know, maybe an upside down triangle or something. And they're making a horrific picture or maybe a real magical picture. And because kids make rules around the age of 7 or 8, everything is so absolute for a 7 or 8 year old. They go, oh, this is birth, or doctors are bad, or big babies can't get out, so I'm not going to eat very much when I grow up. Or it hurts so much to have a baby, I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm just going to have drugs. Or people who make noise are scaring other patients and making doctors mad, so I won't make any noise when I go into labor. Whatever it is, little kids unconsciously make a rule and then they file it. They're not conscious of it. They come to childbirth class. They come to prenatal care. No one, they don't actually know that what's driving them towards a certain book or a certain class or a certain kind of birth, whether hospital or home birth or something like that, is actually could be tied to their first birth story. And then because everything, or first birth stories, there's not just one, there's usually there's a bunch. But they will, anything that doesn't fit the first birth story model might not even be, it's filtered out of their hearing, or they don't see those books. They don't even consider those possibilities. Anyway, so first birth story is how all cultures actually educate their kids for birth, and it happens long before you're pregnant. So one of the things I'm doing in childbirth class and in private sessions is to explore how did you learn about birth? How were you born? And when you were really little, what did you tell yourself that story meant? Do you remember? Can you feel into it? It doesn't have to be super accurate, but you would not believe the insights people get. It's amazing.
And that can really help for just the understanding it all going into it.
Because it helps them understand why they're so afraid of something or why they're so averse to something. But it's not just why they're afraid of the thing, but going back to, because they made themselves a promise they would never let that happen to them. Can I give you an example? Mm-hmm. So when I first learned about this, I was at a workshop, and a woman had drawn a picture of a stick figure on a cart. And she was having a really hard time. She was depressed postpartum. She had had a monitoring and a long birth, and it didn't go the way she had hoped. And all of a sudden, the question occurred to me. It just came out of the blue into my consciousness. I'd never thought of it before. And I just asked her, when you were really little, what was the first birth story you ever heard, and how old were you? And she said, I was about 5. I was standing outside, and an ambulance came to take my mother to the hospital because she was birthing so fast, they were afraid she would birth at home. And I said, and what happened? She said, well, they took my mom, put her on a gurney, and they strapped her to the gurney and rolled her into an ambulance. And I said, well, okay, when that happened, can you remember what you told yourself it meant about you? I said, when you were really little, do you remember what you told yourself about that moment that your mommy got strapped to a table? And she goes, oh, I remember. I said I would never let them do that to me. And I said, and I just realized, I said, so when you look at your picture, you're strapped to a table, even though it's not to an ambulance gurney, but it's still a gurney. So, and she cocked her head and she goes, oh my God, that's exactly what I've been doing. I broke my promise. I feel ashamed. I let them strap me to a table and make me powerless. And I promised myself I would never let them do that. Because in her little girl mind, her mother, I said, what does your little girl mind tell you about your mother? I told myself all these years my mother was weak and I would be strong.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that beautiful? So I said, now what are you telling yourself as an adult? And she just, you know, she was just arched back and her face was bright. She goes, none of that is true. My child thought that. My mother couldn't help it. That what was going on. They were trying to make her not fall out off the table in an ambulance when it was a moving vehicle. She wasn't weak. And I said, right. And I said, how about you? And she goes, I wasn't weak either. They were monitoring me to make sure my baby was safe because that's how we do it now. She goes, I wasn't weak. And she kind of forgave herself. So you see what I mean about the beliefs? It's so fantastic to explore the first birth story, either before birth or after birth sometimes.
And Pam, childbirth preparation is also parent preparation. Mm-hmm. Explain what you mean by this.
Oh, gosh. You know, one of the things that worries me so much is that we focus so much on the birthday. And there's a little bit about breastfeeding, maybe about diapering the baby, things like that. But there's very little attention put on the transition from being a couple or being an individual or a professional or whatever you are, to this brand new role of being a parent. The psychic shift, the responsibility, dealing with how you're going to be doing it differently from how you were raised, and all these different things that come up after you have the baby. So we have a whole 9 months to get ready, and what do we do? What do we do? We wait until the last few months of pregnancy to squeeze in 1 day of classes. Now, sometimes 6 weeks if we're really going for it. Mostly it's 1 day. And a lot of people, only 11% of women even take childbirth classes anymore. They're reading books and I don't know what they're doing. But so they're handed the baby. And what's the internal gestation for becoming a parent, either as an individual or as a couple, ever addressed? No. And in traditional cultures, when you are going to be going to another role in life, whether it's from if you're taking on another responsibility in the village, you don't just get handed some, here you go, and you start your new job tomorrow. You're apprenticed, and you apprentice for months ahead of time, or years probably, so that you grow into the role. Why is childbirth education or prenatal time, parents are not getting together with other parents, but also with people who know about babies and also what happens to couples, and gradually getting them to talk about it constantly and prepare for it so that they're ready for what's happening.
And what's the answer to that question?
Well, here's what I think. There's a guy named Michel Odent, O-D-E-N-T. He lived in France. He's now in England. He wrote a book called Birth Reborn in 1984, I think it was, or 1983. He's an amazing guy. He worked at Petivier in France, and I went over there to see him. When I went over there to see him in 1984, because I loved his book, he took me to his teaching room, which was twice the size of this one, and it had a great big baby grand piano, a great big baby grand, had a baby grand piano in it. Anyway, and they had pictures all over the wall of grandpas and aunties and neighbors and babies and parents, and just they were all stuck on with tape and tacks. It was completely chaotic. And there was chairs and couches all over the places and tables to eat. And I went, so how do you teach classes? He says, we don't. And I said, what, you're Petivier, how do you not teach classes? He says, we don't teach classes. And he was egging me on. I said, well, you must. I just insisted, you must. And he said, here's what we do. They had this Tuesday night sing-along back then. And they had a woman named Marie. She was an older woman. And every Tuesday night, she would come in and she would play music. And the parents would come in and they would sing. That's where I got the idea for my first change to be to sing lullabies. I got that from Michel Odent and Petivier. And after they sing, they feel good. The endorphins are going. You know, the oxytocin's going. They feel happy. They are connected with each other. There's great joy. There's food. And then the parents mingle. And they are learning from each other. So there's a woman who's now third trimester, and there's a new baby being diapered. So she gets to watch. Maybe she gets to let her diaper the baby. And they can ask the parents questions. This baby over here is screaming its little head off, and they can't get it to calm down. So the parents are all like, what are you doing with the baby? Why is it crying? And they're figuring out, oh, we have high needs babies. They're not all going to be easy. Somebody else over here is, you know, holding a pillow over their stomach. They just had a cesarean. So they get to learn about cesarean from her. So there's none of this fantasy birth thing about how perfect birth is, because these people have just come back from the trenches, and they are teaching the new parents who are first trimester, second trimester, third trimester. The parents can bring their neighbors, the people at work, their relatives who need to be reeducated. They're all in this room together. And only when there's a question that can't be answered by the parents because it's technical or there's some new technology or studies, they call Michelle over or one of the midwives and they get a professional answer. Now, this was brilliant, I thought. And I tried to do it in Albuquerque so many times and I've never been able to get it off the ground.
It's more peer learning rather than teaching in a hierarchical sort of situation. You know, I spoke with a mom earlier today for this program and I said, how did you prepare for your birth? And she said, well, I didn't really read any books. I relied on the collective wisdom of all of the women around me, including all my sisters and my mom. Is that what you're talking about?
That's very interesting. Yes, I think so. Now, if she can get enough, I'm thinking of David Bohm, who was a physicist, and he does the Bohm dialogues. Do you know about these? So the idea is if you get 20 people in a room that are not like a homogenous, all from the same way of thinking, as many different walks of life as you can, and you pose a question and everybody answers it, you leave with a broader understanding of the question. So if you have a question, now to do a childbirth class based on the Bohm method, I've tried this, it's very interesting. So you have all these parents from different home birth, hospital birth, I'm going to have an epidural as the first contraction, I'm never going to have an epidural, all kinds of different points of view, which is really cool. And there's no idea to get them all to do a certain thing, to go to a certain outcome. The idea is to have everybody leave with a bigger concept. So you ask a question, whatever it would be, and everybody gets to speak to it, but not to each other. And that's how you can get collective wisdom to open you up. It's really cool.
Pam, I'm sitting with Pam England here in her studio and house, and I'm looking at your artwork all around on the walls, and I wanted to ask you to talk about this piece here. I don't even want to try to describe it. Can you describe it?
Yeah, this one's Mexican Labyrinth of Birth, and it's an acrylic with beadwork on it. Now, my hairdresser is Alberto. He cuts hair down the street. And one day I went to see him and I told him I was writing a book about the birth warrior. And he said he had two aunties in Oaxaca, Mexico, who were parteras, midwives. And that the midwives told the mothers while they were pregnant that when they would be in labor, they would become warriors. And I said, oh, what does that mean? And he said it had to do with diving into birth. So in the top part of my painting, you see a woman diving into birth, and she has to go deep, deep, down, down, down. You see there's the three spirits there on the top. Those appeared, by the way, spontaneously in the painting. I actually didn't put them in there, but that's what I call them. Anyway, they go down into the underworld in labor, and while they're in the underworld, they find their spirits who are holding all of the baby spirits that are waiting to be born, and that the mother has to swim among or move among them the spirits and find her baby. And then she has to wrestle it from the spirit. If the spirit won't give it to her easily, she has a long labor. If the spirit gives it up easily, she has a short labor. And if it's a long labor, she has to do battle because only she can bring the baby back to the relatives who are waiting for the new generation. It's her job. And so the moms are prepared ahead of time to have this mythical story about doing battle with the spirit who's holding their baby to free it with each contraction, give it to me, you know, wrestling with it, wrestling with herself, being tired and having to keep wrestling, right?
That's an amazing story. And I so relate to that because in preparing for our interview, I read a little bit of information I have your book, but I was reading your website and I saw this Mexican Labyrinth of Birth on your website. Mm-hmm. It must be on there because of your painting and your upcoming show. And this description of the mother warriors going to get their baby is the closest description I've ever come to outside of my own story of my first birth. I've never heard anybody say it like that, but that's how I've described my birth. So it's an amazing, I really...
It is true, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in Africa, there's another story along this line. Years ago, 20 years ago or so, a friend of mine went to a garage sale and she had a black hat. She bought me a black hat that had a gold spiral on the top of it, probably from the 40s, right? And we hung it on the wall. She says, you know, I bought you this hat because in Africa, they say that the journey for the baby is in the center of the spiral, and the journey for the baby to come out has to go, it's like a spiral, and it has to find its way out to be born. If the spiral has a lot of rungs, it will take a long time. If the baby only has a few, it will be a short birth. Mm. But what's interesting about that myth or teaching is that the baby actually does spiral out physiologically as well. But the mother needs to go beyond the physiological spiraling. That won't get her through birth. She needs a story. She needs to see it. She needs to have a visual of the baby is spiraling out and that she's just following a curve rather than, oh, my labor's taking too long. I should be this far. It's been this many hours and, you know, all this sort of scientific thinking. Isn't that better to have a myth sometimes?
That's it for our show today. I've been speaking with Pam England. Pam is the author of Birthing from Within, a world-renowned book that provides a holistic approach to childbirth by examining it not as a medical event, but as an act of self-discovery. Pam teaches workshops and speaks at conferences all over the world on topics such as preventing and healing birth trauma, cesarean birth, storytelling, visualizations, and hypnosis, and many other aspects of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. Pam and I spoke about how childhood lessons can color your ideas about your inner strength, how to begin to unravel those lessons, and how big life events, such as giving birth, can teach you lessons about yourself. You can get the freebie today at wellwomanlife.com/047show. Our monthly live event, Well Woman Drinks, brings women together to share our successes and challenges as women leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Woman Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city yet and you'd like to start one, email me at info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe in iTunes and leave a review. This helps raise visibility for the show, which is super helpful when it comes to producing it every week for you. You can also continue the conversation in the Well Woman Life community group at facebook.com/groups/Well Woman Life Community. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you're listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.